in the same way that the people are who are drinking, not drinking, drinking, not drinking, drinking, not drinking, okay? They're getting triggered when they go to pubs, not all the time, okay? But they will be triggered by going to a pub. Maybe not a whiz bang wallop, oh my God, I went to the pub last night, I had this massive trigger. But if you continually go to the pub on a regular basis with your friends or your family or whoever, or on yourself, that in itself will be a snowball of a trigger.
Welcome to the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. My name is Lee Davey. I'm not an alcoholic. I refuse to be anonymous. I'm someone that doesn't drink alcohol, and I spend every waking moment of my life helping other people do the same, like right now. We haven't got a guest today. It's just me waffling on about some old nonsense to do with alcohol, but I'm sure you'll find it interesting. But before we get there, just some housekeeping to get out of the way. First of all, I'd like to welcome Lisa Dinhofer to the Strive coaching team. Lisa was a recent guest on the Alcohol Conditioning podcast. So go back and have a listen to that if you want to check out what Lisa's all about. She will be providing one-to-one and group coaching sessions to our Strivers. And she joins John and Vinny. So we've now got three Strive coaches. We're going to keep adding them as time goes on, bearing in mind how Strive grows, right? So the subscription fees that people pay, the £40 a month, that goes into paying the coaches. So the more people that join Strive, the more coaches we can hire, or the more slots that Lisa, John, and Vinny can offer up, right? So at the moment, Lisa will do 2 a month, and so will Vinny, so will John, so 2, 4, 6. So that's 6. See how my math sense, how smart I am? That's 6 sessions a month then, free for Strivers, but we can actually get them to do more if we have more money, all right? So let's see how we grow and we evolve with that. And just remember as well, the Strive isn't just a place where we help people to become people that don't drink alcohol. It's obviously the crux, you know, of what we do. It's our kind of foundation, our springboard, if you like. But we're here to help people become more fulfilled with their life once they get over that hurdle of alcoholism. So once alcoholism is in the rearview mirror, then we need the support, we need mentors in our life, we need skills, we need tools in order for us to become fulfilled. Because let's face it, we drink alcohol because we live an unfulfilled life, or at least certain areas of our life are unfulfilled. And at Strive, we want to fill that gap. We want to plug the leak, so to speak, right? So in the future, I'm hoping that we'll get Strive coaches that will be able to deal with our issues around sex, our issues around personal finance, our issues around career choice, you know, like every area of our life, nutrition. We've got something in the pipeline there coming up soon. So let's just kind of stick with this, see how it goes. You know, we're just flying off the seats of our pants at the moment, and hopefully it all works out and we can tweak things as we go along and continue to provide value for Strivers. That's the whole purpose here. I also want to welcome Stan to the team as well. Stan is our new sound man. You might have realized that the Alcohol Addiction Podcast has had a little spruce up. So we've got a little bit of music and we've got a little bit of a different intro, and you know, everything's just sounds a little bit better, a little bit better, a lot better. So thank you for Stan for that. Stan's the man. And Stan joins Emma and Anna, who are also the beating heart of the Strive machine. I don't talk about Emma and Anna a lot, rarely talk about them actually. And I should do, because I value their work tremendously. Emma is like my assistant, you know, she kind of like does everything that I can't do. And she works feverishly behind the scenes at Strive, getting us guests on the Alcohol Addiction Podcast, paying people, you name it, Emma does it, right? And then we also have Anna. Anna's our graphic designer. So anything to do with graphic design, anything to do with website creation, that is Anna. Love you both dearly. Thank you very much for all your work. And it's great to have Stan on board as well, okay? A future guest coming on the show. We've only got 2 locked in at the moment. But we're in talks with a lot more people, so don't worry about that. The locked-in guests are Veronica Valley from Soberful. So we're going to be talking to Veronica in the near future. And we're also going to be talking to Shanna Wan from Sober in the Country. If you feel that you're a good fit for the Alcohol Addiction Podcast, or you know somebody who is, then let's hear from you. Send me an email at truthaboutalcohol@gmail.com. And lastly, before I go on to today's podcast, don't forget that we now have a new podcast called the Strive Podcast. So this is the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. It's all about alcohol addiction. Strive Podcast is about interviewing people who I believe have achieved a certain success in their life or in certain areas of their life that we as strivers who want to live a fulfilled life can learn from them. So basically, we interview people to talk about their background, to learn about their childhood, learn about how they grew up and the challenges they faced, what values they work, they're aligned with, and how values impact their life, what their purpose is in life and how they define and talk about purpose, the strategies and the tools that help them to become a success, and also the vision of the future. The first episode is out there now. It's Bernadette Jiwa. Bernadette Jiwa is a storytelling, branding, marketing expert who currently lives in Australia. She's a massive mentor of mine. I love everything she does. I think she's an amazing human being. And we talked about her life, her meaning and purpose, and how she found so much meaning and purpose being a mother, okay? And how she transitions from being a mom to being a mom who wrote, you know, like 5 to 8 amazing books. And now she's in charge of a group, a community called The Right Company, which I'm a member of, which is fantastic. And she's just released her first online training course on the Akimbo workshop called Storytelling Skills or something like that. And I've just taken it. It's fantastic. And I really suggest you take a look at that. So Bernadette was our first guest lined up. We've got professional poker player Jason Kuhn. Jason is a guy who plays for millions of dollars per day playing poker. You know, I've seen him play in pots that are like a hand that's over $1 million. But Jason is much more than just a high stakes poker player. Every facet of his life comes under the microscope. He is well into his nutrition, well into his health, well into his mindset. He is a very, very successful human being. And we're going to be talking to Jason. And we're also going to be talking to the Feeling Good author, David Burns. David's been a podcast guest on the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. And I love David Burns' work, the cognitive behavioral therapy approach. We apply a lot of his philosophies and tools here at Strive. David's got a new book out coming out soon. We're going to be talking to David about his life. How fantastic is that, right? So get it downloaded, folks. The Strive Podcast. I don't know where it is, but you go searching for it. I know it's on SoundCloud. But go searching for it. I'm sure you'll find it, right? If you can't find it, let me know at truthaboutalcohol@gmail.com and I'll dig it out for you. So I want to talk about environment a little bit today, okay? Because I think we need to be aware that addiction is like a monster, right? You know, addiction is not just one thing. So I blurt out a lot about the importance of understanding that alcoholism is an invisible, violent, and dominant belief system. And that is the glue of our philosophy at the Truth About Alcohol and Strive, right? But it's not the be all and end all. It's not everything. Because addiction is far more complicated like that. And, you know, we interviewed Maya Salovich. I don't know if that's how you pronounce her name, on the Alcohol Addiction Podcast many, many moons ago. She has a great book called Unbroken Brain, where she talks about the complexities of alcoholism. And one area that she talks about is environment, about how important it is for us to be aware, or at least thinking very profoundly about our environment and how our environment plays a role, what role it plays in our addiction. Okay. So for example, let's just say you want to stop drinking coffee. Let's say you want to give up caffeine and you're working every day as a writer with your laptop in Starbucks. Like, is that the smartest decision? You know? And being someone who works on a laptop, who spends a lot of time at Starbucks, who doesn't really like drinking coffee, I could tell you it's not a very smart decision because you're always thinking and having that cognitive dissonance in your mind about whether or not you should go up for a coffee. So you're sat there in Starbucks and your brain's always saying to you, go on, just go and have a coffee. And it's thinking of the, you know, all the reasons why you should be drinking coffee, right? Or as we call it in the intensive, the 5 N's, like all these different reasons, these justifications that you should be taking coffee. Maybe not coffee's not your thing. What if you're trying to quit sugar? If you're trying to quit sugar, would you get a golden ticket and go to Willy Wonka's chocolate factory? You know, would you follow Gene Wilder around his chocolate factory with the Oompa Loompas if he was trying to stop eating sugar? Or would you hang out at a bakery if he was trying to stop eating sugar, right? If you were trying to give up pornography, would it be a wise idea to hang around in orgies, you know? Like, would it be a good idea to do that? Or to go to a sex shop? Or to go to Amsterdam and hang around the red light district? Like, are these environments you want to be in if you want to stop watching pornography or reading pornography? If you wanted to stop gambling, like I was a gambling addict, right? If you wanted to stop gambling, would it be smart of you to go to Las Vegas and hang around the casinos? Would that be an intelligent thing to do, right? Would it? You know, so I would think about that. And lastly, if you wanted to stop, if you're a heroin addict and you wanted to stop taking heroin, would it be a good idea to hang around in the areas and the rooms and the houses or the dilapidated buildings that you used to hang around in with your mates when you used to shoot up? And incidentally, when you're there, they'll be there shooting up as well. Is that an environment that you want to be in, right? And the reason I'm banging on about this is because people who think that they want to be people that don't drink alcohol, the people who cannot rip themselves away from the pub, right? Or who believe that the pub is not playing a role in triggering them to drink. I believe wholeheartedly that that is resistance talking. In the short term. So let's separate this a little bit, right? So you have people who are struggling to be people who don't drink alcohol. And what I mean by struggling is they think that they want to stop drinking, but they can't put together a run of any more than 30 to 60 days, maybe even less. And then they drink. And then they put another run in and they drink. And then they put another run in and they drink. And then this happens for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, like this pattern repeating itself. So you're doing really well. What you've actually done is you've created a lifestyle where you're actually moderating. You're moderating, but this and you're moderating successfully. But you've got this cognitive dissonance in your mind that's saying, no, I really don't want to drink at all, but I really love drinking, right? If you're that person, then I wholeheartedly believe that the pub is a very, very, very dangerous environment for you. Very, very dangerous environment for you. If you're me, or if you're Nikki, or if you're Craig, or if you're Stella, or if you're Laurie, you know, the four ambassadors, Strive ambassadors, who came to Strive suffering from alcoholism as an invisible, violent, dominant belief system, finding it really difficult to stop, who did the work, who understood a new philosophy, who did the neurological changes in their brains to have a new belief system around alcohol, if they can now go into a pub, it's not a problem because they're not being triggered in the same way that the people are who are drinking, not drinking, drinking, not drinking, drinking, not drinking, okay? They're getting triggered when they go to pubs, not all the time, okay? But they will be triggered by going to a pub. Maybe not a whiz bang wallop, oh my God, I went to the pub last night, I had this massive trigger. But if you continually go to the pub on a regular basis with your friends or your family or whoever, or on yourself, that in itself will be a snowball of a trigger that is slowly gathering pace in your subconscious. And at some point, it will turn into an avalanche and there will be a tipping point and you will drink alcohol because you're going to an environment that is designed for you to drink alcohol. It is designed for you to do the direct opposite of what you are telling yourself you don't want to do. You're saying you don't want to drink alcohol, but you're going to a pub where it's designed to make you drink alcohol. Everything about a pub is designed for you to put your hand in your pocket and order a pint. That is what it's designed for. And you're going there to spend your time. And I'm telling you, it is no more riskier than grabbing that golden ticket and going to Willy Wonka's chocolate factory when you don't want to drink alcohol, or shooting up, going to a place where all your friends are shooting up, where you shoot up for years and you're hanging around there. Why would you do that? Now, one thing that the resistance does when I start banging on about this is it will tell you that I'm an extremist. This guy is an extremist. He doesn't know what he's on about. Am I supposed to just like abandon all my friends and live on my own, or live alone and not have a life? Like, you know, I remember having a conversation with my dad once. He'd been out drinking all day. He'd come home and he was frying some bacon and some eggs and sausages in a frying pan, 2 inches deep of fat, smoking a cigarette with the ash kind of curled over, just about to land in his fryer. And I made myself a kale salad. And he looked at me and laughed like a smirky laugh, like, look at this fucking prick with his kale salad. And I caught on it. And I said to him, Dad, look, you've been drinking, you're smoking, and you're eating that shit, you know? And he turned around and took his cigarette out and put it out in the ashtray and said to me, well, at least I've got a fucking life. Like, I don't have a life, you know? And then he started, what do you want me to do? You want me to stop smoking? You want me to stop drinking? How am I going to have a life? We need to remember, folks, that we choose to do different things in life, take different actions or believe in different things, right? We have that choice, right? We make a choice to go to the pub. We make a choice to smoke cigarettes. We make a choice to drink alcohol. We make a choice to put sausages and bacon and eggs in a big fucking vat of oil that's going to give you heart disease, right? We also make choice to eat kale salads. We also make choice to drink water. We make choices all of the time, right? And we need to be fully aware of that. Nobody is dragging us to a pub. We're making a choice to be there. If we did the old experiment that you could be given, someone will give you a million in poker. There are prop bets in poker all of the time, right? If somebody in poker said, I'll give you £1 million sterling if you don't go into a pub, you don't set foot into a pub for a year. You're not allowed to set foot into a pub for a year. I'll give you £1 million. Now, I'm not talking about taking £1 million because of materialistic reasons to buy yourself a Ferrari or a new pair of shoes. £1 million could change many, many people's lives, right? If someone was to give me £1 million right now, like I started this podcast off talking about hiring coaches, I could continue to hire some of the world-class coaches in the world because I could pay their salaries. I could improve this podcast. I could get better podcast guests on, more influential podcast guests. Like, would you like to listen to Russell Brand talk about addiction? Right? Well, I could pay Russell Brand to come on it, right? If I had £1 million, but the likelihood of him coming on, if I just give him a call to come on, is very remote, right? You know, money helps to change strive so we can have a 24-hour coaching session. We can give the money to charity, whatever, right? So don't think materialistic about this. Let's say you have the opportunity to earn £1 million. If you never step foot in a pub again, you'll make it work, right? Because you'll realize you don't actually have to be in a pub. And the £1 million incentive means it's greater value to not be in the pub than it is to be in the pub, right? Because of the £1 million. Now, the £1 million really, metaphorically speaking, is being someone who doesn't drink alcohol. But whereas the £1 million would be more value for you than going to the pub, being someone that doesn't drink alcohol right now is not enough value for you than being in a pub. You're valuing your time in the pub more than being someone that doesn't drink alcohol. And until that changes, you will never be able to put a run in. You will never be able to be someone that doesn't drink alcohol, right? And it's all about choices. People will say, yeah, this guy is an extremist. No, the resistance will say, this guy is an extremist. And you might even talk to people and say, hey, this guy doesn't want me to go in a pub. You might even talk to other alcohol experts in the field, like Annie Grace's of this world, or Holly Whitaker, or Lauren McCowan, or Bell, or whatever. You know, Andy Ramage. You might talk to these people and say, Lee doesn't want me to go in a fucking pub. And they might agree with you. They might go, well, that's fucking nuts. Like, how can you just change your life like that and never see your friends ever again? But I'm not talking about a permanent thing here. I'm talking about doing what is smart and what is wise and what is clever, if you've got your priorities straight. So if you want to be someone that doesn't drink alcohol, your number one priority is, I want to be someone that doesn't drink alcohol, right? It should trump everything. Let me give an example. Let's say that, so for me, when I do my weekly planning, I have a series of projects that I have to do, I want to do, right? And those are things like improve Strive. All right, that's a project. Another project is, at the moment, write a thoroughly researched article on the 7 habits of highly effective poker players. Okay, that's another project that I have got going. And aligned with those projects are things like family time, sleep, excitement. What am I going to do that excites me? Okay. And then what I do is I think about it. I say, what is most important to me? And then I put those things in first. So when I figure out what's important to me, I'm most important to me. So I always put my sleep in my calendar first, and I always put my meditation in there, and I always put my exercise and my stretching, my me time. If I want some downtime when I just watch a TV or watch a TV show or something, or some other hobby, or I just want to fucking do nothing, right? It's important that I keep myself with it mentally and physically. That goes in the calendar. But then the next important thing to me is family. Like, I want to spend time with my wife and I want to spend time with my kids. So that goes in my calendar as well. But imagine if I was someone that drank alcohol. If I drank alcohol, am I going to be very effective of putting me first and putting my family first if I'm someone that doesn't drink alcohol? Like, am I consistently going to be able to put my family first and put me first? No, I'm not. Alcohol will put the kibosh in that, put the spanner in the works. Might not like all the time, but it will put the spanner in the works. But if you put, I'm going to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol as a number one priority, then you will become a better father. You will become a better husband. You'll become a better mother. You'll become a better wife. You will be more likely to love yourself and to spend the time taking care of your mind and taking care of your body, right? On this personal growth. So if that is what you're going to do, then the first thing you put in your calendar before sleep, before your family, before anything, is I'm going to work on being someone that doesn't drink alcohol in these times, right? Now, if you're prioritizing that first and you're doing that right, and 100% of people who want to be someone that doesn't drink alcohol have to do this, because if you don't, it's going to take forever. You might get there. Like, some people just white knuckle it. Like, I know people have just white knuckled it. But if you want to get there in the smartest, quickest way, you've got to put the vow of being someone who doesn't drink alcohol first. Okay. And if you do that, you are not going to go to the pub. You're going to say to yourself, hang on a minute. If I want to be someone that doesn't drink alcohol, I cannot go to the pub because the pub is designed to get me to drink alcohol. Now, this doesn't mean that you can't go to the pub when you are someone who doesn't drink alcohol. Like, if you get to a position where I am and the ambassadors and other members of Strive are at, right? Like, Phil is a good example. So Phil is approaching a year now as someone who doesn't drink alcohol. Phil can go to a pub and he's not going to be triggered, right? If you can get to that position, then go to the pub. Like, go there. But you're not there if you're drinking, not drinking, drinking, not drinking, drinking, not drinking. And to turn around and say, no, it's not the pub. It's the resistance talking. It is the pub. The pub is a massive aspect of it for many, many reasons, right? So don't go to the pub. Don't think of not going to the pub as punishment. If you think that not going to the pub is a punishment, then you want to go to the pub. Your child will come out and you'll say, fuck Lee. Lee doesn't want me to go to the pub. I don't want to be punished. I'm going to go to the pub. You've got to make the choice to create a social structure, a new life outside of the pub. Get into different activities that keep you away from the pub, and which activities provide you with more value than going to the pub. So you flip the switch. So now suddenly going to the pub is not as valuable as the other things you're doing in your life. So when it comes to making a choice about going to the pub on a Saturday night or watching Avengers in the cinema with your buddies and then attending a book club or a gaming group or whatever you choose to do, now, suddenly going out on a Saturday night drinking is not as fun and interesting or as absorbing or as valuable to you as the other alternatives I just gave you. But that's a choice you have to make. If you say to yourself, oh, fucking hell, I can't go to the pub on a Saturday night because Lee won't let me, right? And you just sit at home stewing, you know, wishing that you could have been in the pub. Jesus, man, of course you're going to want to go to the pub. Of course you're going to think that I'm talking nonsense. Of course every suggestion from your friends that you should be in a pub and that being at my strive is extreme is going to make sense to you, right? It's like pare it down to the decision to drink alcohol or not. If you think that it's punishment because you're not allowed to drink alcohol, then the cognitive dissonance will be loud as fuck. It will want you to drink alcohol. If you think, I am so grateful I don't get to drink that shit, then you're less likely to drink alcohol. It's the same with your environment. It is the same. If you think that not being in an environment is punishment or you're missing out on something, you're going to crave to want to be there. And that craving that's going to take you there will lead you to drinking at some point, right? Don't see it as a punishment. So two things. First one is, don't think of this as a lifetime ban from pubs. You just can't go to the pub right now. Think of it like you just caught malaria and you know, you're in quarantine and you can't go and mix with your kid for a while because you don't want her to catch malaria, right? It's just, it's a short, sensible decision that you're making, not me, that you're making. I'm not going to the pub, right? Short term, not long term. And secondly, don't look at it as a punishment or lack. Look at it as an opportunity to fill that space and time with something more important in your life. Because as Brené Brown says on a Netflix show, as soon as she moves out, the older she gets, the more she realizes the importance of time. Time is the most important and valuable asset you have in your life. You need to question whether spending that time in a pub is the right place, okay? So really important. Pub culture. I want to talk about pub culture a little bit as well. Okay. So here at Strive, we want to be someone that doesn't drink alcohol. And I'm trying to curate a picture of what that looks like. And at the moment, being someone that doesn't drink alcohol for me looks very much like a person that lives Brené Brown's wholehearted life. So if you've read The Gift of Imperfections and Daring Greatly and all of Brené Brown's work, she is really creating a model of how human beings could get more value out of the time on this earth by making different choices and living by certain values and displaying certain traits. And she calls that wholehearted living, right? And I'm in the process of creating a training course, which will be available for Strivers on that very topic, right? Because I think there are parallels here, right? Now, if I believe that being someone that doesn't drink alcohol mirrors Brené Brown's wholehearted life, you have to ask yourself, would Brené Brown be spending her time in pubs? Now, bearing in mind that Brené Brown also used to be a victim of alcoholism and she's clean now. She doesn't drink anymore. She is someone that doesn't drink alcohol. She went down a different route than us. She's a 12-stepper, okay? But she reached her goal. Would Brené Brown be going to the pub? Would Brené Brown be encouraging her followers to live a wholehearted life? You really want to be immersing yourself in the pub culture. Like, I don't think she would she? I think what Brené Brown would be advising you is, let's forget about, step back a minute. Brené Brown would be saying to you, why do you go to the pub? What is it that you get out of the pub that you're not willing to let go? Now, I know that is alcohol. But you will tell yourself that it's likely connection. I have to go to the pub to connect with people. Now, Brené Brown's work around wholehearted life, connection is really, really important, right? Because disconnection is one of the key criteria that leads to shame and hiding your vulnerability and eventually wanting to numb by drinking alcohol, right? There's the vicious circle right there, right? So, Brené Brown, she wants you to be connected. She thinks that connection is really important. Now, if you're right in your thinking that you can only get your connection at a pub, then wouldn't Brené Brown be advising people to go to pubs? She would be speaking on a TED stage saying, look, connection is really important. And one of the best places to connect on earth is the pub, because that's where we human beings go to connect. She would be telling you to do that. That's the advice she would be giving you. Well, of course, she's not giving you that advice. Why? Because if you look at this, through a rational lens, and I know addiction is very emotional, but let's look at it rationally a minute. If connection is what you want, then if you put meeting, let's give you two scenarios. Let's say you're pub culture. Let's say you're person A who goes to the pub, and that's how you get your connection. Or you're person B. You're one of the Armenians that I see in Starbucks every single day who sit down and drink coffee and they laugh and they joke. And they, for me, it looks like they're having deep, serious, meaningful conversations about life, right? For hours on end. Who is likely to get the most connection? The person who's in the pub, where you're surrounded by people who are drinking a powerful poison that slowly remove, disconnects you. So it's slowly killing your brain cells. It's slowing you down. It's slowly stupefying you. It's slowly making you more egocentric, more personal driven, more, as Stephen Covey says, like more of a personality ethic than a character ethic, more fixed mindset than growth mindset, as Carol Dweck says. Like, if you're in that environment, are you going to get more connection than if you're just sat in Starbucks, kicking it back, drinking coffee or tea or water or whatever floats your boat, shooting the shit and talking about life? Which person is going to be more connected? All right. You know, it's a rhetorical question, folks. Obviously, the person who's going to be more connected is the person who's in Starbucks. Now, you might turn around then and say, or your resistance will, but none of my friends are in Starbucks. All of my friends are in the pub. But do your friends spend their entire life in the pub? Like, are they people who just sleep, work, and then they're in the pub? Or is it likely that they are just as disorganized as the rest of us? And other than going to work, large parts of their day are filled with nothingness. There is no schedule. They're just flying by the seats of their pants. Is it possible that if you called them up and said, do you want to come round for a cup of tea? And they just pop round for a cup of tea, that you could connect with that person? Do you remember back in the day? I certainly do. In the 80s, long before we had mobile phones and laptops, do you remember that your mum used to always have people around the house, that you would come downstairs and there would always be another woman or two or three sat around drinking tea? That certainly happened when I grew up in the UK. That was connection. But then over time, that stopped happening, didn't it? And we just started sticking ourselves in front of the TV set alone, smoking our cigarettes, you know? And the only time we got connection was when we went to the pub, right? But we can go back there. Right? We can go back there. The only reason we go to the pub is because we are making a choice to go there because it's easier for us. Why is it easier for us? We can hide there. Part of the problem with people who go to pubs and get triggered is they haven't come out yet. They're riddled with shame. Like, they feel that it's shameful to be someone that doesn't drink alcohol. And I'm telling you, until you come out, until you are vulnerable and find the courage and bravery, turn that shame at least into guilt, but with a view of actually eliminating it forever and having great pride in being someone who doesn't drink alcohol, until that pride like overcomes the shame, you're always going to be at risk of drinking alcohol, because not only are you in an environment designed to get you to drink alcohol, the pub, you're surrounded by people who don't even know how serious you are at being someone who doesn't drink alcohol. So they're going to want you to drink. So you're getting a double whammy. You're getting the environment that is set up and designed for you to drink alcohol. Think about going to a supermarket and the height of the sweet, the candy section, as you're going out to pay. It's, the height is right at that, the kid level, right? So your kid can say, Dad, Mom, can I have a Hershey's bar, can I have a Snickers or whatever, right? The pub is designed just like that. The slot machines, everything, the games, the bar, everything is designed for you to drink alcohol, right? That's what it's designed to do. But in addition to that, you've now got all your friends asking you to drink. And because you haven't come out, you don't want to say no, because if you say no, you know the reaction 9 times out of 10 is going to be, what's wrong with you? Well, you don't want anything to be wrong with you. You want to be quote unquote normal. That's why you're trying to fit in. But as Brené Brown would teach you, there's a massive, massive Grand Canyon of a difference between wanting to fit in and belonging. Belonging is growth mindset. Fitted in is fixed mindset. you know? Belonging is developing a character ethic, and fitting in is developing a personality ethic. Fitting in is me, 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 me. Belonging is us, right? The pub, I'm sorry, is not a place of belonging. It's a place of fitting in. It's a place of, it's a place where we gather because people like us do things like this. We've always done it. And nobody's doing anything different. Nobody is doing anything different. So how about you say to two of your friends, which is something I did when I stopped drinking alcohol, Neil and Steve, hey, Neil and Steve, I'm going to go to Pictures on Saturday night. Do you want to come with me? For those of you who don't know what the Pictures is, it's a cinema. I remember Steve said, fucking cinema? I'm going to cinema with you. Like, that's a bit gay, innit? I don't want anybody who's gay, like, writing me letters complaining. That is the language of the valley, right? If you are someone who decides to stop drinking alcohol, that's what people are going to say. That's what people are going to talk about, right? So I'm like, well, we're just going to movies to watch. We're just going to movies to watch a movie, guys. Like, I'm coming. I'm going. Do you want to come or not? Like, do you want to watch a movie? Yeah, I do. Well, let's go to a movie then. And more than that, when are we going to meet? Well, let's meet earlier for an hour. Let's have dinner before, or let's meet up after. So you can meet and talk and chew the fat and then go to cinema. So now you spent like 2 hours watching a movie, maybe an hour together, 2 hours together, 4 hours. Now 4 hours of your time spent going to the movie and just having a chat with your mates, right? That's no different to the pub, is it? Right? That's really no different. You're communicating and you're connecting with your friends, but you're not in the pub. You're in a different environment. Or maybe you say to them, let's play squash. Let's play badminton. Maybe like the Armenians, you say to them, let's just go to Starbucks. Maybe you say, we're going to start a poker game and everybody meets up to play poker. I used to play poker once a week, but when I stopped drinking and we would start playing poker on a Tuesday night at 7 o'clock at night and we would start playing poker at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. We didn't just play cards. We talked about life. We connected. That's what we did. And I often say that poker helped save my life. It helped keep me away from drinking because I was surrounded by people where drinking alcohol was secondary to playing cards and having good communication and talking. Because who wants to drink alcohol when you're gambling? You're going to lose all your money, right? So it's a choice that you make. If you can make a choice to say to yourself, hang on, I'm going to come out and I'm going to tell my friends that I don't drink alcohol anymore, then that allows me to say to them, well, do you want to go to cinema? Or do you want to go to a restaurant? Or do you want to go to a library? Or do you want to go to Starbucks? Do you want to go to the park? Do you want to go trampolining? You know, because over time, the person is not going to say to you, why? Why can't we just go to pub? Because they're going to know that you don't drink. One. Two, they're going to respect you because they're your friend, and you're going to explain to them what support looks like, and they're going to give you that support. So they're not going to say, no, I'm not going to do these things with you. They're going to want to do their things with you because they'll know that it's what you need as a support mechanism right now, particularly your partner, the person you share a bed with. So this leads me to the other point about being in a pub, right? Is if you're in a pub, and I said the environment is there to get you to drink, but also the people are there to get you to drink, right? The barman wants you to drink. He doesn't want you in there drinking his water. He wants you in there spending more money on pints and wine and shots, right? And your friends want you to drink because they don't want... There's two reasons why your friends will want you. There's many reasons, but two that come to mind. One is they don't want the cognitive dissonance rattling around in their head. So they actually want you to drink alcohol so they don't have to think about why you're not drinking alcohol. Secondly, they might really care for you. And because they don't understand that alcoholism is an invisible, violent, dominant belief system, and you haven't told them what support looks like, one of the ways that they care for you is by telling you you don't have a problem. So they might say something to you like, look, I don't think you have a problem. Like, if you're an alcoholic, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm not an alcoholic. Look, I know you get drunk every now and then, you make a dick of yourself, but in the main, you don't drink that much. Have a drink. Or something like, well, come on, it's Friday. You've worked your tits off all week. You deserve this. That is someone trying to help you out. But you have to take responsibility for that bad advice because you are in the closet. Unless you tell people what support looks like around alcohol, you're going to be in a sticky spot. You're always going to get people asking you to drink. And if you don't be consistent with it, you'll never know when it's going to bite you in the ass. Let's say you do quite a good job about telling people, you know, like you're in a pub with a few of them that you go to pub with, you don't drink alcohol. So they're not giving you too much jip. But then you get the job of a lifetime. This just job you've wanted all your life. And the person who's given it to you, he takes you out for a meal that first night and he wants you to drink wine. If you haven't developed a real pride around the fact that you don't drink alcohol and you've created some real strong boundaries about how you communicate that you don't drink alcohol to people, this is an example where you could easily stutter. Like you could easily stutter and you could easily get triggered and you could easily have a drink in order to please this new guy because you or woman because you really, really want this job. But if you've come out in a really structured, organized way, and you've come out and you've told people, I want to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol, you've explained the reasons why, and most importantly, you've told them what support looks like. Okay? If you do that consistently and you have great pride in it, not lack, then you're not going to get tripped up by the new boss. You're going to say, oh, I'll come out with you, but I'm not drinking. And he'd be like, why? And you're like, ah, I don't drink alcohol. Well, I think that's going to be a real problem in our job because we're going to need you to connect and communicate with people. Yeah, I know. And I'm a great communicator and I'm a great laugh. And hey, when everyone's in a pub and they're slowly losing their shit, I won't be. I'll be on top of it and I'll be able to talk about our business, corpus mentis, for hours on end, right? Like, you know, there's a confidence behind it, isn't there? Now, on this coming out, I know it's hard. I know it's difficult. I really do understand that. I've been there, right? I know what it's like to turn around and say to all your mates, especially if you're a man, I'm not drinking anymore. I know what it's like. But the perception of the fear, if you rate it out of 10, it's going to be a 10, right? 9 or a 10. It is nowhere like that when you eventually tell people. Because what will happen is, because you're telling people who you care about and who care about you, when you tell them, really structured, that you're serious about this shit and how you want support, 99.9% of them are going to support you, right? The 0.001% that don't, you don't fucking need them in your life. The ones who take the piss out of you and turn it into a joke, all right, you can have a little bit of empathy with them and understand that it's coming from cognitive dissonance, but they keep banging on about it, just get rid of them out of your life. You don't want them in your life, right? There are 7.5 billion people in the world. I'm sure you can find friends if you make a choice to want to find friends, right? Like-minded friends, okay? So you've got to come out. But this support system, telling them about your support is really important, you know? Like, I was saying this to Liza the other day. If I was in a pub and Liza said to me, have a drink of wine, you really deserve it, or have a drink of wine, one won't kill you, I would go fucking mental. Like, I would seriously question if she understood, if she even knew who I was. Like, I wouldn't like go down like marriage ending cul-de-sac here, but I would be like, what the fuck? Like, I would be really angry and really annoyed. Like, are you seriously asking me to drink alcohol when you know how important it is for me? Like not to drink alcohol. And look at what I've done. I've created a podcast. I've created a community. I've created training courses. Like I've done all that because I fucking don't want to drink alcohol, right? Like going to the pub is the complete opposite of that. Like that isn't a strong boundary. That's like saying, I've got no fucking boundaries, right? If your partner or your friends, but mainly your partner, because they're the person who you really need to confide in more than anyone, who are really going to need to support you, right? If they are talking to you in this way, they either are clueless on how to support you, and you're to blame for that because you haven't told them, or they are really seriously struggling with cognitive dissonance, and we can have a bit of empathy with that, but no excuse. Because we need to be respected and our decision needs to be respected. And if people are asking us to drink alcohol, they are not respecting our decision and they're not respecting us. And in our relationships, particularly with the person we share a bed with, respect must be one of your bedrock values. Like without respect and trust, there is no relationship. So you need to come out. When someone says to me, I was out in a pub and I was drinking water and then somebody turned around and said, do I want to drink? And then I had a drink. My first question is, why isn't the fact that you don't drink the number one topic of conversation here? Every time I go to the pub and someone says to me, do I want a drink? And I say no, it always 100% of the time leads into a conversation about why I don't drink. Nobody ever says, oh, okay, what do you want? Instead, they always say, why don't you want a drink? Right? Always. So, and I like that because that gives me the opportunity then to say, oh, well, you know, I am a leader of this group of people called Strive who choose to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol as a springboard to living a fulfilled life. I have a podcast. I talk to people about it. I fucking love it. Like I love not drinking alcohol. I love having those conversations because I want to affect change in other people, right? I want to get the cognitive bells of the cognitive dissonance ringing, right? So when you're in a pub and that is not the topic of conversation, and I'm not saying it has to be the topic of conversation all the time, but with new people, if that is not the topic of conversation, something's not right. It's a good sign that you haven't come out of the closet, right? It's a good sign you haven't come out of the closet. And what does coming out of the closet look like? Well, Tony, one of our beautiful Strive members recently wrote a note to his WhatsApp group, to all his friends. Fuck me, Tone. You've got a lot of friends. I don't know how you have so many friends. I mean, I only had the bandwidth to have like close relationships with a few friends. Like if I have a lot more than that, I'll fry my skull. Sometimes Strive can fry my skull because there's so many people saying, Leah, how do I do this? What do I do? Can I do it? I don't have the bandwidth to be able to connect deeply with everybody. It's really difficult, right? So try to keep your friends, you know, to a few close friends, right? You don't need so many. But Tony's got a gazillion and he can manage it somehow. And he wrote a WhatsApp group message to them all. And it was a really heartfelt message. It was like, guys, I don't want to drink alcohol anymore. Like, I really don't want to drink alcohol ever, ever, ever. I'm telling you now, I don't want to. I can't remember the message, so I might be wrong. Tony, if you listen to this, you'll let me know. I'm not quite sure you told the guys how they could support you. Check on that. You know, do they know what support looks like? Do they know not to try to get you drink? So for example, I would say, for me anyway, personally, I would say, look, I'm not going to drink again. And this is what support looks like. If by all means, invite me to social functions and stuff. But if I say no, I want you to respect that. I don't want you to question it. I want you to respect it. If I go to social functions with you, under no circumstances do I ever want you to ask me to drink. I don't want you to say, I don't want you to have pity on me. I don't want you to say things like, you deserve a drink or you haven't got a problem. I have got a fucking problem and I don't want to drink. And if you say those things, you are really damaging me and you are leading me along the road of addiction. I don't want to go there, right? So I don't want you to do that. I don't want you to have, I don't want to have alcohol in the house. When I'm triggered, I want to be able to lean on you and to talk to you. And I just want you to listen to me about what's going on for me and showing support in that way. I want to be open with you about the fact that I'm a member of this group called Strive. I listen to this podcast with this idiot called Lee Davey, and we talk about alcohol a lot and we talk about our private life a lot. And I want you to be okay with that because it's really important to me that I do this. Okay. And it's really important to me that I get quiet private time when we're doing our online meetings and our groups. And I want you to respect that this group of people are really important to me and I love them very dearly, okay? You don't have to like them. You don't have to agree with our principles, but you do have to agree and respect that they're really important to me and I need that time and patience. I need time in my life where I work on myself. I need to put myself first and alcohol last. There are times when I will not come out to the pub with you. We need to find different ways of communicating and connecting and I need your support on that. I don't want you to be critical of me, to judge me, to frown your face at me, or to moan and groan if I don't want to go to an event with you. I want you to be big enough and strong enough to go on your own, okay? And if people turn around and say, why isn't your partner? I want you to be comfortable with saying, she doesn't drink and she feels uncomfortable around people who drink. She doesn't want to be here and be cool with that, okay? It's not a reflection on you. That's your shit, not my shit, right? So that's really important. I think that's it. Thanks as always for listening and being a subscriber here at the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. I really, really appreciate it. And if you appreciate me and the other strivers and the work that we're doing to make a difference in our world, then this is how you can help us out. First of all, you can rate and review our podcast on your podcast platform. Give us a 5-star review. Tell us how, you know, what you think of it and how you like it, et cetera, et cetera. And if you don't like it, you could trash it as well. That's pretty fine as far as I'm concerned. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel. Every single podcast, no, that's not true. 99.9% of our podcasts are also recorded on video, and we post a video on our YouTube channel. If you prefer to watch rather than listen, then Google Lee Davey YouTube, and that is Lee Davey spelled L-E-E-Y-D-A-V-Y, L-E-E-D-A-V-Y, and you'll find our YouTube channel, and you can subscribe right there. You can also subscribe to our Instagram channel, and you'll find little snippets of our podcast on there. You'll also find any blog posts that I write on the Instagram channel. Just Google The Truth About Alcohol Instagram and you'll find us there. The most important thing you could do is join Strive. Strive is £40 a month. Once you join, if you don't like it, I can give you your money back, okay? Anytime you want to stop, you just stop and you don't have to pay anymore. So really, it's a really fluid way of paying for our services or not paying for our services, right? What you get? You get more than 100 coaching videos. You get put into a group, so you'll be a Strive ambassador-led groups, so you can get more of a personal touch. You'll also get healing from our Strive coaches. So we've got a couple of Strive coaches up there, and we're always continually filling more slots with more Strive coaches to actually work on some of the issues you've got at a deeper level. We have live, we have online meetings. We also, the most important thing is we are a support group of like-minded people with shared empathy and trust. So get over to Strive. As I'm always repeating myself here, you do drink alone, but you should not be trying to stop alone. Strive is a really, really important component in for anyone who's trying to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol. And Strive is much more than a place for people who want to stop drinking alcohol. We are a community of friends. We are a growth community. You know, we're like, most people drink alcohol because they're leading an unfulfilled life. How do you fulfill your life? Well, that's what we do at Strive. We help each other. We're in the same trenches as each other, and we really try to help each other grow and evolve. And the freedom module, the last part of the intensive module, which you get for free when you join Strive, that's all about finding that fulfilled life. I would say Strive is a lifetime gig. Yeah, you can leave whenever you want and get your £40 a month back, but this is a lifetime gig. This is where we work together as a group to help other people and to help improve ourselves. So head over to www.thetruthaboutalcohol.co.uk and join Strive. If you like this podcast, then also check out our second podcast, the Strive Podcast, where we interview influential and successful people in a bid to inspire our strivers to lead a fulfilling life. You can find the Strive Podcast on our YouTube channel and in all the best podcast platforms, right? Finally, if you've got a question, email me at thetruthaboutalcohol.co.uk. Email me at thetruthaboutalcohol@gmail.com. And if you've got any questions whatsoever, you can nail them to me there. And if you want to speak to any striver to ask them what it's like on Strive, then let me know in that email and I'll put you in touch with them and they can have a chat with you about it. Thank you very much for your support as always. I really appreciate it. Without you, there would be no Alcohol and Digital Podcast. So thank you.